Over the ages, the human relationship to the earth has always been profoundly shaped by the stories we tell about it. Every culture has their myths, and every great religion to some degree has its foundation in a creation story, in a story that explains what the place of a human being is in the universe, a story that gives us some guidelines, that tells us who's boss, that gives us cues as to how we are to engage as a part of the natural world. I never fail to be amazed by the sheer audacity of those scriptural literalists from every tradition, because very often our guiding myths, even those from the same exact texts, don't agree with one another. This is a sermon series we've been busily doing for most of this church year, and as we examined earlier in this series about creation stories, just such a contradiction exists in the same textual tradition of the Hebrew Scriptures. Genesis can't even agree with itself on the parameters of the relationship between human beings and the natural world. There were, in fact, two stories written by two completely different people, representing two different perspectives in ancient Hebrew societies, two stories smashed together back to back in that first book of the Bible and mutually attributed to the Creator. These myths of a God who formed man from clay and of Adam and Eve, the chosen who fell from grace, were the myths that the Puritans and the conquistadors carried in their hearts when they set out to subdue a new land. These were the myths that propelled manifest destiny, that quintessentially American idea that God wanted us to have dominion over all the lands between the mighty oceans. These were the myths that drove whaling ships from tiny New England harbors to fish whole species nearly to extinction. The myths that gave rise to the Trail of Tears, the myths that still today pump through pipelines and up through seabed oil rigs and outward toward the waiting coastlines. These myths have been canonized and given authority and referred to and quoted and taught across the ages. Environmentally speaking, the aspect of that Hebraic creation story that carries the most weight in the American imagination centers around the word dominion. Dominion, a word that towers over people's prayers and policies and has done so for most of our nation's history. Dominion, defined by our friends at Webster's Dictionary as the right of governing and controlling or supreme authority. In the noun form, the word refers to land so subjected to supreme authority or control, and human beings have long been in pursuit of dominion, both before the creation of this particular myth and after it. Last week, I was away for a few days visiting my sister in Cincinnati, and I had the opportunity to visit the Creation Museum, which is a multi-million dollar complex in Kentucky dedicated to educating the public about arguments behind creationism and their dispute with evolutionary science. Now, I am no creationist. I really, really don't think the earth was created 6,000 years ago, and I profoundly don't think that the book of Genesis is a document to be taken literally. In fact, I think those concepts are usually dangerous. For most of my visit at the Creation Museum, I felt like an interloper who was about to get busted and called out on the spot. But apparently I do not, in fact, have a tattoo on my forehead which reads infidel in neon letters because no one called me out. Everyone was overwhelmingly kind and their intent seemed to be more to save our souls than to teach us science. I tend to take efforts to save me as a sort of convoluted expression of genuine concern and compassion, so it wasn't all bad. And I don't want to spend our Sunday morning mocking these people. That would be too easy, wouldn't it? They have a right to their faith and their particular way of understanding the world, even if it's not my own. But like the proponents of any philosophy, what I think creationists and biblical literalists must do is challenge the destructive ways in which their beliefs are manifested in the world. Creationists themselves should challenge the idea that all of the universe, plant and animal and star, was designed by God for us, for our use and enjoyment and dominion. The idea that we have the right to rule as lords in this kingdom and to treat it with as much carelessness as our inattention can muster. As environmental activist Barry Lopez writes, our culture has a mainstream system that is often uninformed by, even hostile to, biology. Human beings' destiny, many people assert, is alongside their one and only God who gave them the earth to use for whatever it might provide in the way of comfort and material wealth. That done, the earth would be abandoned, a rapturous departure, an empty warehouse. An empty warehouse, a season of pillage followed by a rapturous departure for the pillagers. Any myth that lets us think this is our calling as human beings is a broken myth. Any story that would have us forget our place alongside the family of things is a broken story. And over the ages, we have told that first chapter of Genesis as a hopelessly broken tale, have used it to justify our basest instincts and perpetuate our self-aggrandizement. Any story that gets us where we are today, an ecosystem on the brink of disaster, is a broken story. And yet that tale of unexamined dominion still gets told. And even a creationist has to see that their powerful God, if worthy of worship, never could have intended that. People have stories. We have myths which move our lives and shape our circumstances. The question is, how do we tell the story? And to what end? What do our stories say of us? This morning, the story we heard of the creation of the earth is in many ways similar to the Hebraic creation myths. The earth starter descends from above and weaves creation out of darkness and eternal seas. But to me, the fascinating difference is that in this story, God and the creatures spend a great deal of time together thinking and talking about when, what, and how human beings should be. They speak like old friends, the turtle and the earth starter, with long pauses and deep questions, and the story seems to indicate that they know, those ancient ones who came before us, how very high the stakes were in the creation of the first man and the first woman. The turtle, the ancient creature with a back made of stone and claws that contained the whole earth, is a dear friend to the Creator, a wise sage who sits and wonders and exists before and after the dawn of our species. God in this story does not make animals for man. Instead, he makes man out of a thoughtful conversation he first had with the animals. If anything, we are the children of the great turtle, the inheritors of the coyote, the descendants of the birds who poked the holes that made the stars. They are not ours, we're theirs. And if they have been around for so much longer than we ourselves, it might be that we have much to learn from them. I heard a story on public radio the other day about these people who had sort of a paradigm-shifting experience with the natural world. It's about a group of marine rescuers and a whale who was hopelessly trapped in some fishing nets. Now, the rescuers were a collection of marine researchers and fishermen, and they worked together for hours to cut loose this whale from the entanglements that had her all bound up. And at some points, the ropes were dug so deeply into this leviathan flesh that they had to cut her to cut the ropes, and all the while she lay there in the water. All the while, she writhed in pain, and those researchers wondered if when that last rope snapped, if when she was finally released, her release would bring danger to them. if her great fins and her angry tail would thrash them into oblivion when the last of the ropes went trailing down into the ocean and she was finally free. But when that fateful moment came, when with a big whoosh and a clatter, all the chains fell away and she dove deep, it was as if a tractor trailer had just disappeared. One moment she was there, the next she was gone. And the crew was preparing to get back to the boat and return to their normal lives when that great beast surfaced again. She raised her head just above the surface of the water and swam slowly to the nearest diver, who sat quivering with fear in the water. For a few seconds, she locked her gaze on that man. That big saucer of an eye focused directly on his eye as if to ensure that he understood, to make certain that he saw, and then she moved on. That great creature moved on, and she locked eyes with each and every member of that crew, each in their turn, one at a time. Without rushing and without missing a single person, she looked directly at them all and dove once again into the deep. The divers from that boat swear even today that she was thanking them. Her gaze carried a message of gratitude or understanding, and to a person, they felt blessed. Now, scientists can't prove any such thing. That whales feel gratitude, or creatures feel shame, or that any human emotions can be directly translated to human experience. But whatever it was, those divers felt a deep communion in that moment with a creature more ancient than them. They felt they had looked into the eye not just of a creature to dominate, but a sister on this earth, and nothing can ever take that feeling away from them. And I remember our story. In those far-gone reaches of time and history, the Earth Starter sits upon a raft with an ancient creature, and the turtle asks, "Tell me, are there going to be people in this world?" And there is a long pause, an eternity of mulling it over, before the Earth Starter says yes, and the two ancient beings, animal and deity, go about the work in time to create us, who would in our own time forget that we are accountable to anyone but ourselves. Forget who our mother and our father is, who our big sisters and our brothers are, who was there when we came to be, and who will be there when we are gone. On that elemental ocean in this story, we were created not for dominion, but for fellowship, not to reign, but to coexist. I can't speak today of the ocean without thinking about those reaching fingers of oil spreading further and further in the Gulf of Mexico. While we wait for the moment when that spill will touch our shores, we know it has already touched the homes of the wild things, the ocean where the ancient creatures dwell. The sea upon which the turtle floated is once again slicked by the byproduct of human carelessness and the evidence that once again we have forgotten that the earth is not merely ours to master, but the home of our brothers and our sisters. It was St. Francis of Assisi who prayed in thanksgiving for brother sun who gives us light, for sister moon who shines upon us, for brothers wind and air and sister water and mother earth. When I sat down to write this sermon, I didn't think I was writing about environmentalism. I thought you pretty much covered that last week. But then I remembered that any talk of our creation, of who we are and who God is and how we are called to be in relationship with the rest of the created order, any of that is talk of environmentalism. It's talk about relationship, about how we're supposed to treat our family. We can't live upon this earth without leaving a footprint. It's part of the beauty and the tragedy of it all. But we take care of our family if we believe that ours is only one among the footprints and only one among the voices which deserves hearing. We are, too often, not the crowning jewel of creation, but mostly a kind of bratty younger sibling shouting out our mastery in the face of all who came before us. The ancient creatures cannot help but hear us, see us, know our influence, for we are loud and insistent and mighty. And we have so often turned our back on the family of things, perhaps forgotten that we are part of a family at all. We are the children of creation, not its culmination, and not even its first fruits. We are the inheritors of what was begun long before we arrived. We should be, must be, humble in the presence of our older siblings, the creatures who have walked this earth for so long, and with whom we must share our hopes and our dreams. As the oil approaches our shores, let our hearts and our prayers go out to those whose livelihoods are threatened, to those who have never taken one single fish for granted, and let us likewise remember Brother Turtle and Sister Whale, Ancient Mother and Blowing Grass. All life sprang from the ocean, and our family, as broad as that ocean, has much to tell us and much to ask of us.